This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. There's a lot that we don't understand about autism, like exactly what causes it and if it's truly an epidemic. But particularly since the CDC last year came out with the alarming statistic that one in 150 American children are on the so-called autism disorder spectrum, it's been a headline regular.
Tonight, Jenny McCarthy fighting to save her son after his devastating diagnosis of autism, the mysterious disorder that locks kids in a world of their own.
Autism is a neurological disorder that makes it difficult, sometimes profoundly difficult, to communicate with and understand the emotions of other people. And lately, the debate over its causes and treatment have become hugely contentious. Before we get into that, we'll hear from a writer who has a form of autism, a guy named Jonathan Mitchell. He lives in Los Angeles, and that's where our contributor Tamar Brott met him a few years back.
My name is Jonathan Mitchell. I look ethnically Jewish, brown hair, brown eyes, 5'11", about 215, 220 pounds. Well, I guess I'm not a matinee idol, but I think I'm, you know, reasonably good looking, though maybe not a matinee idol.
I met Jonathan in a writing class a few years ago. He has a mild form of autism called Asperger's syndrome.
What are the manifestations for people who don't see you?
Well, I have a loud voice and I make funny movements and I'm 46, never had a girlfriend, and I, you know, don't have very many friends, and I have, you know, poor social judgment and say inappropriate things, and I repeat the same things over and over again, like things like that. Oh, well.
Jonathan's in the small percent considered high functioning, which means he lives a fairly normal life. He's got his own place. He drives. By day, he works as a medical transcriptionist. At night, he goes to karaoke bars.
I'm just mad about saffron. She's just mad about me.
But no matter how hard he tries, he knows he can never fit into the NT world.
NT stands for neurotypical, which is sort of a more political term for normal that some people use.
Because Jonathan tends to wig people out. He's always flapping his arms or snapping his fingers. And then there's the social skills. Jonathan will often say the wrong thing or be too blunt. Once he asked a fat man if he shopped at the Big and Tall store. Another time I introduced him to some friends, and as an icebreaker, he said that people usually found him repugnant. So he's been rejected his whole life, and sometimes even harassed or beaten for things he doesn't even know he's done. And this is what he writes about when he gets home.
I have to turn on this light. There, down here. You know, sometimes I'm cheap about electricity, and I don't like, you know, I'm like Lyndon Johnson was. I don't like to leave the lights on. And
this looks like a... Was this your grandmother's furniture in the 70s?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, you got it. Wait, was this, or some of it? Some of it was, not all of it. No.
Apart from his grandmother's furniture, the place is stark. The walls are all blank. There's a bookshelf, mostly with bestsellers in it. Jonathan likes Michael Crichton and John Grisham.
Now we come to one of the more interesting places. This is my den, you know. Here I write my fiction in this room, and...
When Jonathan first started writing at the age of 38, he wrote brutal little short stories in which the protagonists were often autistic virgins trying to get laid.
I guess the general overlying theme might be, you know, the angst of autism, the loneliness, the celibacy, the social isolation. And
what's astounding is how funny he makes it. In one story called The Conversion, a 47-year-old virgin named Drake Dumas is so fed up with rejection that he tries to enlist the aid of a televangelist named Reverend Spurbeck, whose specialty is turning homosexuals into straight men. Drake begs the man to turn him into a homosexual so he will no longer mind being rejected by women. "That's incredible," replies Spurbeck, who then tries to rape him.
I tried to write at a very young age, when I was about 14, but I just couldn't, you know, get the words out, or my problems made it hard for me to apply myself, but I finally, you know, did it.
Was it agony getting there?
Well, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. It wasn't easy. And
by the time we met, Jonathan had written 16 short stories about rejection. And he was just starting to work on a novel called The School of Hard Knocks, which is the story he's been trying to write since he was 14 years old. The first thing he told me about it was that he hoped it would be a bestseller so he could get a girlfriend.
I remember, you know, the novelist Charles Bukowski, how he wasn't a very attractive man, yet he had sex, you know, with tons of women that he was able to meet at, like, his readings. And, you know, that sort of intrigued me.
But that's not the only reason. Part of it was, you know, to tell a story as well.
No one really knew what to make of the story when Jonathan first started reading it in class. It starts with an introduction to the mind of the autistic and to the unlikely hero of the story, Andy Horowitz.
Obsession and perseveration, the bread and butter of the autistic. There was the famous case of the lady who had been obsessed with squeeze machines and cattle chutes and become an animal behaviorist. Another autistic lady's pet obsession was flags. She slept with a cutout map of Russia every night, just as a child would sleep with a teddy bear. Another boy could think and talk of nothing but washing machines. With 8-year-old Andy Horowitz's, it was old television commercials, which he repeated and repeated, almost all of them having aired on television decades before he was born.
What struck most of us was Jonathan's complete transformation when he read it. He became everything he's usually not. He lost the mannerisms, he became confident, and he could do lots of accents.
Knock that stuff off! You are wasting their taxpayers' money and mine time!
It seemed to be the be-all, end-all satire of autistics trying to fit into the NT world. In a nutshell, the main character, Andy, is packed off to the state-of-the-art Boudreau School for the Educationally Challenged, headed by one Marilyn Boudreau, the so-called Empress of Special Education. Boudreau has promised little Andy Horowitz's parents that she can cure their son of his desire to repeat old television commercials and teach him to pass for a normal boy.
Well, it's autobiographically inspired. I wouldn't say it was like a Romana Clef or any, you know, like a complete mirror image of my life, but it was inspired by events that happened in my life, some of it.
But whatever happened to Jonathan all those years ago has bubbled into one of the oddest revenge fantasies perhaps ever written. At the end of the book, Andy exposes the Boudreau School as the sham it is, and then flies to Washington to expose special education as state-sponsored rejection, which Jonathan portrays as torturing and marginalizing people like him for life, so society doesn't really have to deal with them. But no one sums it up better than Boudreau herself before she's hauled off to prison.
Boudreau climbed up on a chair shouting, "Sure, my educational methods are a sham. Sure, there are no useful treatments for autism or for ADHD or learning disabilities, but these parents don't have to know that. They need to have hope and faith, even blind faith. They would never be able to accept the fact that their little darlings will always be a sow's ear and never the silk purse they imagined when they were pregnant."
On very rare days, Jonathan actually acknowledges that he's proud of himself for having finished the novel. But mostly he says it's meaningless unless it gets published by a major house. In fact, he says he'd rather not have it published at all if it's by a small house. And he plans to use his own disability to try to turn it into a bestseller. While we're at Borders Books waiting for his first draft to be copied, he reels off the names of all the other disabled people who've parlayed their disabilities into bestsellers.
Temple Grandin, who had an autobiography published by Major House, and Matty Stepanek, he's an 11-year-old boy in a wheelchair with muscular dystrophy who wrote some poems and stuff, and his book got on the New York Times bestseller list. And then there's Helen Keller, who got the movie The Miracle Worker made about her, starring Patty Duke as Helen Keller.
But even in Jonathan's most elaborate fantasies, he remains cautiously optimistic.
When you fantasize about being a best-selling novelist, specifically, what are you seeing?
Just seeing my name and the number 10 and the New York Times bestseller list. That's about it. It's not really more specific than that.
Wait, in your fantasy, you're at the bottom of the bestseller list?
Well, I guess I could do number one, and maybe I have sometimes, but I think, maybe that's getting a little too ridiculous, and if I were as well-known as John Grisham or Stephen King or Michael Crichton, I'd get stalkers and have all sorts of problems, and it might be worse for me than it is for them because of my autism. I'll be happy with number 10.
For Studio 360, this is Tamar Brock.
Jonathan Mitchell is 52 now, and he's still fine-tuning that novel and writing a blog, which you can link to through studio360.org. In one of his blog posts, Jonathan Mitchell points out that treating autistic adults isn't really a top priority for researchers. I asked Blythe Corbett about this. She's a professor of psychiatry at the University of California at Davis and an expert on autism.
I think one of the reasons we focus on children is the hope that perhaps if we can intervene earlier, and some of our research shows that's a possibility, that we'll be able to change the course of the disorder. Even though we may or may not be able to actually create a cure, which is a word that I hesitate to use at this point, but we may be able to make significant improvements.
Can you just define what autism is and what so-called autism spectrum disorders are?
Sure. Autism spectrum disorders are primarily defined by impairment in three primary areas. First and foremost, social difficulties, which can manifest itself from everything from failure to make eye contact to inability to understand facial expressions and gestures. Also, individuals who have autism have delay or a complete lack of language. And then the third part of the characteristics are these repetitive behaviors and restricted interests.
Blythe Corbett is my guest today, and in a minute we will look further into autism, for instance, at how theater has helped some people who have the disability. This is Studio 360 from PRI, Public Radio International. Stay with us.